Well, who fights over the thermostat? Well, a lot of people raised their hand, and a lot of people wasn't being honest. in this series that we're calling Relationship Goals, want to take a look because, you know, relationships can be hard sometimes. And we handled such a deep subject last month that I wanted to take kind of a lighter approach. And I know that might sound strange, but I wanted to take a look at something that we all deal with. We talked about this a little bit last month, but we all have this need to be in relationship. We can't do this thing called life all on our own. But on the other side of that same coin, the more people you put into a problem, the more complicated it gets. I thought that would be an amen moment right there, but it's okay. You know, right? Because that's just how things go, you know? And especially with what we're going to talk about this month, we're going to basically really drill down on the closest relationships in your life. We're mainly going to be looking through the lens of your significant other. But this, a lot of what we talk about is just relationship-worthy stuff for any relationship that you have. We're going to basically look at it through, like I said, your significant other. But a lot of this still plays out in all the relationships that you have in your life. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this subject is because, again, relationships can be hard. And probably if you've been in a relationship for any amount of time, you can attest to that. There are seasons where you just seem like it's just not clicking, it's just not right. I wish we could go back to how it was when we were dating because you were such and such, and now we've just gotten comfortable and your real colors showed out, or whatever the case may be. But things might not exactly be how they were when you first dated. We'll talk a little bit about that. And we're also going to look at some ways, or I believe some good ways that will help us have better relationships at the end of this series. You know, so what I want to talk about through this series is help you make some relationship goals for your relationship that will make it a relationship that will be blessed by God and enjoyed by you. And not just you, but the other person that you're in the relationship with. So, what I have to start with is what I start every counseling session, every premarital counseling session, every marriage counseling session, really any time that I talk to someone about a problem, because 90% of the problems people have are problems with somebody else. The big thing that I always say right off the bat, before we talk about what they did, what they said, what you did, what you said, before we talk about any of that stuff, I always say this first. Communication is the key. Now, I know that might not look very profound to you. And usually the response I get is kind of like the response you just gave me, like, really? I already knew that. Right? Or you might be thinking, that isn't that profound. I know communication is the key, but let me tell you about this, and let me tell you about this situation, and let me tell you about this scenario, and let me tell you what they did, and let me tell you what I said back, and on the story goes. And I always say, we need to talk about this part first. Communication is the key to any and every relationship you will ever have or ever be in. Communication is the key. The problem is, most of the time when I say communication or anybody says communication, and when I encounter people who have a torn or strained relationship or a tough relationship, they are either misdefining this word or taking it for granted in their relationship. Here's what I mean by communication. I have a definition. This is my definition for it. But I think you can agree with it. Communication occurs when one side, that's me, understands the other side and is understood by the other side. Now, I'm gonna say that again because I know that's kind of a mouthful, and again, it doesn't seem that profound, but I really want to drill down on this. Communication occurs, true communication occurs when one side, that's me, understands the other side. In the case, I'm going to use my wife as an example a little bit today. I've already warned her, kind of. And being her, I understand where she's coming from, and then she understands where I'm coming from. That's when true communication happens. And again, you might say, well, yeah. But that's not usually how it plays out. Usually how that kind of dynamic plays out is I talk at them for a while and try to make them hear what I'm trying to say. And I only pause long enough for them to talk a little bit so they won't leave the room, but then I jump right back on what I want to say. That's not trying to get my point across. That's, you know, that was always my thing. I'm just trying to get my point across. Is it just me? Or?
No.
Okay. They didn't think it was. But what I would do is I would just try to get my point across. I did not try to understand where they were coming from. I just wanted to be understood. I wanted them to know where I was coming from because in that dynamic, I thought communication was I unload all my stuff on you and you figure out what to do with it. That's not communication. Or maybe your experience of communication is the other side, where you can't get a word in edgewise because you're not the type A aggressive type. And you just take it and then you passively aggressively get your side across, or you just ignore it altogether, or you rebel from it, or whatever the case may be. But when we're talking about communication, we're not talking just about the words you say. We're talking about how you say the words you say. We talk about the actions you do around the words you say and how you say the words you say. We're talking about everything that you do communicates something, especially in relationship. It is magnified in relationship. Everything you do communicates something. A lot of times we don't think about it that way because we just want to fight to get our point across and then try to, you know, try to coerce them sometimes or try to manipulate them sometimes to do what we want them to do. Now, we don't think about it in those terms. We have an argument, I win, or she wins, and then we go on about our merry day, right? No, I don't know. That's not the way God designed it. That's not what communication looks like. That's not what healthy relationship looks like. Healthy relationship looks like, and I put it this way, maybe you got it, maybe you didn't, but I put it this way for a reason. Communication occurs when one side, that's me, understands. So I seek to understand that side first before I seek to be understood. In fact, Stephen Covey, the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, this is one of the highly effective habits. Seek to understand before you seek to be understood. If you want your relationship to be successful, you will seek to understand where the other person is coming from before, we'll say that one more time for a bit, before you seek to be understood. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters a great deal because when you're patient, and your tone of voice is reserved and calm, you are communicating that their opinion, what they are saying, their feelings all matter because they do. They do. And what you're communicating is, we can have a discussion, we can even be in disagreement about something, but I respect you to let you get your thing across, and then I want to talk to you. And let's try to come together. Okay? Now, I want to say this too. Because I've seen this before. okay, I'll just shut up. I'll let you say your thing, and then when you're done, then I'm going to come in and right behind you and say my thing. That isn't this dynamic. That is manipulating the situation. What we're talking about is true communication, not just with your words, not just with your tone of voice, but with every action that you do in that relationship. It matters. It communicates something. And I'm not just getting this from nowhere. Solomon, who was known as the wisest person to ever live, he collected had this collection of wise sayings, what we refer to as proverbs. And in those proverbs, sometimes it might have been a story, or sometimes it was just a snippet, like one wise saying, or one thing that you could take and apply to your life directly. And this is what he says. Proverbs 18:21, who Jesus referred to as the wisest person to ever live, obviously outside of Jesus. He says, life and death are in the power of the tongue. Life and death are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Now, the interesting thing about this, just as a whole, he's saying, whether you speak life into a situation or you speak death into a situation, you're going to eat that fruit. In other words, if you sow bad things into the situation, guess what you're getting? Bad fruit. If you serve good things into the situation, life-giving things into the situation, you're going to receive life-giving fruit. Now, why does this matter, and why is this talking about? It seems to be just about the words you say. No, that word tongue refers to language. That's the literal definition of that word tongue. In the original language, it means language. And by language, they mean communication. So what am I saying? Life and death are in the power of the way you communicate in your relationships. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. It doesn't take Dr. Phil. I could have got Dr. Phil. Actually, I didn't even try to call Dr. Phil. But I could have had him come here, and he would have said the same thing. Roundabout. He might not have quoted Proverbs. I don't know, but when you are continually putting downgrading communication, when everything that you put into your relationship is downgrading, demeaning, and derogatory, that's the kind of relationship you will have. If you put life-giving, encouraging, and every, not just word you say, but the tone you say it and the actions you do communicates that you're uplifting and giving life to your relationship, that's the kind of relationship you will have. But for some reason or another, when we get into the dynamic of relationship, this just kind of goes out the window. And isn't it strange that the people that we are closest to and the people that know us best are the people who see the worst in us? Why? Because what's in there comes out. We talked about that last month. But you need to know that everything that you do and everything that you say communicates something in your relationship. The question that you need to ask is it life-giving or is it killing this relationship? Because eventually you sow enough bad things into a relationship and it will die. It will cease to exist. What am I saying? We'll go to the next thing. This is our big idea today. The way that you communicate has the power to kill or heal your relationships. The way that you communicate, not just the things you say, not just the tone of voice you use, your actions included, all of that stuff, the way that you communicate has the power to kill or heal. It has the power to destroy or give life. It has the power to ruin your relationship, or it has the power to restore your relationship. In any case, in any relationship that you have, communication is the key. Every time. Now, as we go through the rest of this series, we're going to talk about conflict. And we're going to talk about the way that we parent. And we're going to talk about some different things, but you need to know, you're going to hear this every week, the way that you communicate is the key to everything. Now, on that, for the remainder of our time today, I want to give you a really good way to understand the way that you communicate in your relationships and the way that your significant other communicates in the relationship. So I've given you an exercise inside of this. Now, I'm just going to briefly talk about this, and then I'm going to explain it. So this piece of paper is not original with me. I meant to bring the book out here. I encourage you, if you really want to delve into this, to go and get a copy of the book. If you can't share, you know, read together a copy of the book, get two copies of the book, you know, whatever works for you. But it's called The Five Love Languages by Dr. Gary Chapman. And what I've given you inside your bulletin today is a five love language test that will let you know what your love language is. Now, the option or the object is, if maybe you can do this and share the piece of paper. I've laid a few more out there. I was going to make more copies, but remember I told you the printer was on the fritz this morning. So maybe you use a separate sheet of paper, whatever it is. But I encourage you to take this, and I encourage you to let your significant other take this. And you will find out, as I'm fixing to talk about in a second, but you will find out a lot of clarifying things about not only how you receive love or what your love language is, but what your significant other, how they receive love and what their love language is. So that's your homework, but let me talk about it. So the five love languages. This is an interesting concept. And all it is, all of this talks about the way that we communicate love and the way that we want love communicated to us. So I said there are five, and we'll go through them, and then I'll explain it a little bit more. First one is words of affirmation. That is encouraging words, kind words, words that come from humility, words of appreciation. What this looks like, and I'm big on this, and what this looks like in the dynamic of relationship is, hey, you look good today. Hey, you know, how many people appreciate, hey, you really look good? I mean, we're talking about significant other. It's okay for you to say that. And not just on Valentine's Day. Right? It's okay to say that. Not no special occasion, just, you know, you're excellent at your job. You're a wonderful person. Just uplifting, encouraging things. It might not be what you verbally say. It might be a little note. Listen, you're excellent. Love you. Whatever. But these kind of words build a relationship up. And the person who receives love best this way, words of affirmation, and I'm one of these people, they appreciate being told that they're just appreciated. When you do little things or say little things or give a card, they really appreciate someone just saying, you know what? You are doing an excellent job, or you are an excellent person, or I really appreciate you for X, Y, and Z. They live off this. This is how their love tank is filled, if you want to think of it that way. And I'm so big on this one because this is one way that I receive love, and so this is the way that I pour it out. And with my kids, and you can also Google this and take a test designed for your kids and learn what their love language is, and we did that, and that's pretty interesting. But for my kids, I know that the world that they're going to be out in, and this goes for everybody really, but the world that they go out in is really full of a lot of negative and bad words. And I want them to see our relationship, mine and Devin's, and our household relationship, our family relationship, as a source of affirming words. So every chance I get, I tell them that I love them every day. I tell them that they're great. When we're doing school, I tell them I'm so proud of them for when they get it right. And when they get it wrong, I encourage them to continue to do better. Why? Because I think that is one of the most powerful things that you can do to express your love and communicate your love and appreciation to someone. But unfortunately, when you have a strained relationship, the communication tends to break down. And this is one of the first things to go. People start to retract and they don't say kind and humble words. The second one is quality time. Quality time. Undivided, focused attention. This is another big one of mine. And what this means is when I'm talking to my significant other or someone I'm in a relationship with, I don't want a phone to be in their hand. I don't want them watching TV or trying to read a book or trying to hold multiple conversations at one time. I want undivided, focused attention. And when you give me that, I feel loved. And people who receive love this way, that's exactly how they feel. In fact, they look at time as this precious commodity. I know we all have things that pull at our time, but we also all have the exact same amount of it in each day. And so when you give me your time or I give you my time, I am saying I have paused what else ever I got going on and I'm giving you my time because I love you. And the people that receive love this way, they view just a simple thing of, hey, let's just go on a date. I just want to spend time with you. And we're going to turn the phones off and have a dinner or whatever. They feel loved that way. And this goes into your kids. Grayson's a big one on this. He just wants to spend time with playing basketball outside with him, undivided, just him. Means the world. The next one is gifts. That's visual symbols of love. Visual symbols of love. Now, when I say gifts, some people go, I don't have a budget for gifts. Right? But gifts don't have to be extravagant, and it works better. I'll let you know a little secret. People who receive gifts, it works better when it's unexpected or a surprise. And it doesn't have to be anything big. It could be, you know, something, for instance, with Devin, if I just bring her a candy bar. Man, that's a big deal to her. You know? Or when I say, it's just something that says, hey, I thought of you enough to bring you a drink or to spend just a little bit of money on you, just a little time of faith, just something that connects how I feel about you to this thing. And again, some people might look at this and say, well, that's materialistic. It's not about the thing. It's about what the thing represents. It's about the fact that the drink or the pen, the marker set, whatever it is, it could be something small, it could be something big, that they view it and say, this is something that my significant other or someone that loves me thought enough of me to buy this for me. And the people who receive love this way, they don't view this as a waste. They view it as an investment into their relationship. That's what they view it as. The next one is acts of service. Now this is usually you'll find if you take this test, you have two or three that kind of range higher than the others. And for me, this is my third one. This is doing something that you know the other person would like you to do. Now, this could be simple. It could be, hey, like for the way this plays out in mine and Devin's relationship is, I get up with her in the morning, a lot of mornings, before she goes to work, and I make her coffee, maybe make her breakfast, and iron her clothes. Now, that's nothing, maybe that's nothing big to you. But if someone did that for me, that would just mean the world. It's saying, it kind of goes back to time, but it's something that I thought enough of you to go ahead and try to take care of you or go out to the car and crank it up so it's warm when you get into it to go to work. Or you know, I'm just going to go ahead and fold all the clothes for you, or I'm going to do the dishes for you, or I'm going to restock this cabinet, or whatever it is. But it's doing something for the significant other or the other person that you're in a relationship with. It's doing something for them that they would love for you to do for them, but they're not going to ask. Some people receive love this way. And the people that receive love this way really notice when you do these things. And the last one is this, physical touch. This is simple as holding hands, hugs, kisses, maybe rubbing shoulders. If you're in your married relationship, physical intimacy. But it's all kind of, and this is the interesting thing about touch. Of the senses, it's the only one that's not relegated to one specific place. Like hearing is your ears, and sight is your eyes, and smell is your nose, and I'll go ahead and taste is your taste buds. Touch is really all over your body. And the interesting thing about this is when you touch my body, you're touching me. And I don't mean, you know, I'm not trying to sound bad with this, but just, you know, walking by and rubbing shoulders or just patting you on the back, or even when we shake hands, this is a part of physical touch. And for someone that receives love this way, it just means the world if they're going on a trip and you're holding their hand. Or you hug them before you leave the house and hug them when you get back or kiss them on the cheek. It just means so much more. That's how they receive love. And the reason I bring all of this up is, one, I think it's extremely interesting. But two, is because you communicate love or you communicate something with every action that you're doing in your relationship. Wouldn't it be better if you communicated love? Not just communicated love the way you want to be loved, but you did the extra step and you understood the way the other person receives love. That's what this test is all about, so that you can learn that. Because what I've come to realize and what was so clarifying about me and Devin taking this test and taking the test with the kids is we learned some interesting things about each other that we didn't really know. Like me, touch is way down. Because I'm just one of these people don't like to be touched a whole lot. Right? You know, some people are like that. Some people love to be touched. What we found out about Brayson that was so interesting is he hates surprises. So anytime I'm on the thing where, would you like to be surprised? Nope. Don't want to be surprised. I would just rather know. Brindley loves presents. We already knew that. But that's her thing. She just loves them. And what it's done is I opened our eyes to better love the other person. In fact, I have this saying up here. If you love someone, you will learn to speak their love language. You will learn to communicate love to them in a meaningful way to them. Because oftentimes what happens is when we attempt this, we start to try to communicate love the way we want love to be communicated to us. I'll give you a perfect for instance. Words of affirmation. I give a lot of words of affirmation to the people around me. But I give it, but their love language might not necessarily be words of affirmation. And so when I'm giving it and it's not just resonating, I mean, it's a good thing, but it's just not resonating with them like it would with me when they give me words of affirmation. So with Devin, I've learned to change it. Not that I don't give her words of affirmation, but I think in the terms of trying to speak her love language. Or in the terms of our kids, they're trying to speak their love language and do what they would like to do. For instance, quality time. When you're trying to spend quality time with someone, I wrote this down, it's best when you let the person who receives love that way direct what you're going to be doing, the activity that you're going to be doing. Brayson loves quality time, and I've learned that if he wants to play basketball, it's better for me just to go outside and play basketball than to try to do something else with it. Because he just really feels like when it's his idea, he wants the quality time for him. Now, I've given you enough examples, but there's so many more. But here's why it's important. Because when we refuse to speak the love language of the other person, things start to get strained. And when things start to get strained in relationship, communication is often the first thing to break down. Now, you might be in the same vicinity as someone, but that doesn't mean you're in a healthy relationship with that person. You might stay married for years, but that doesn't mean that your marriage is healthy. And what I'm trying to give you here is a step, a handle on how to get that back. And the reason I mentioned this at the beginning, the reason that you might even say that you would rather it be right back when they were dating, you know why? Because when you're dating, you seek to show love the way that the other person wants to be loved. And when you get married, for some reason, it's not a you thing or a me thing, it's just a thing. We get comfortable and we stop trying as hard. What this is doing is saying you need to continue to try just that hard because the person you have chosen to spend the rest of your life with or the person that you're in relationship with is worth it. Because if you really love them, you'll learn to speak their love language. Now, when I talk about communication, I talk about things breaking down. The last thing that I just want to say, it is so sad to me when people are in relationship but they don't communicate. And when they don't communicate, every other part of their relationship just starts to go haywire. They're like two ships passing in the night. That's not the kind of relationship God wants for you. And that's not the kind of relationship you want for you. So with every bit of encouragement that I could give you, take this seriously. Whether you take this test and it helps you, that's why it's there. But for something, you need to sit down and talk to your significant other to get back to a form of communication that works for you. And I'll go ahead and say this. I'm going to get into it in a couple of weeks, but I'll go ahead and say this. Distance does not help that. Any kind of barrier that you put between you and the communication between you and the other person, whether it be a phone, whether it be a screen, whether it be texting, whatever it is, it makes it that much harder. Why? Because it isn't just the words you say. It isn't just the tone you say. It's the actions that you put around all of that stuff that communicate whether you really love them or not. The last verse I wanted to read is another one out of Proverbs. It says this: pleasant words, or in other translations it alludes to the correct language. The correct language, the right words. Pleasant words, or the right communication, are a honeycomb, or like a honeycomb. Sweet to the taste, meaning they're pleasant, you appreciate them. And health to the body. Isn't that interesting? That Solomon says the right word, pleasant words, are health to the body. I mean, when you think about it, he uses the analogy of a honeycomb. But when you think about it, what he's saying is when you use the right language, it heals your relationships. When you use the right language, it brings help to the situation. It brings life to it. So I just want to encourage you with everything that I can. One of your relationship goals, in fact, the number one relationship goal has to be communication. Because if you're not communicating, that is, seeking to understand before you seek to be understood. If you're not communicating with the person you're in a relationship with, your relationship is dying. It might be slow. It will be painful. But that's the reality of it. I don't want that for you. You don't want that for you.